Hello and welcome to another episode of Shipping and Handling. I am your host, Jennifer Rudden.
And I'm your co-host, Bridget Smith.
Thank you to everyone who wrote in with questions for our money episode. I think we had a lot of fun talking about money and the various nuances and shenaniganery thereof.
And how to get it.
sort of what to do with it in publishing once you get it, kind of, even though we kept saying, like, we're not going to give financial advice. And then we kept giving lots of financial advice. So, you know, life is a rich tapestry. So before we get dived into today's topic, which is sort of the topic we were going to talk about last time, which is the seasons in publishing, we would like to thank our two donors since last episode. Kristen says, I have been listening through your podcast from the beginning, 15 until I'm caught up, and I just want to say thank you for doing this podcast thing. So much great advice and content and laugh. Have some wines on me. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Joy says, love your podcast. Thank you, Joy.
Yay.
So thank you to everyone who has donated or subscribed or left us a review or sent in a question.
And we would especially like to thank you very much this week for the donations that you've sent in, because we recently had to replace a very expensive piece of equipment that allows us to actually record our voices and share them with you.
It was so, literally the needful implement.
We're so grateful that your donations have allowed us to do so without shelling out from our own bank accounts.
Yes,
very grateful.
It really means a lot to us. And it's got 4 recording channels, which means that
more guests.
We're going to be able to have guests. Speaking of which, I'll do another plug for the survey, which I think we're going to keep up until mid-month. I'm going to put the links again in I keep calling them liner notes. It's not a fucking CD.
Why not?
I don't
just
know.
Just do it. Do it. Go with
notes.
It.
and thank you to everyone who has responded to that so far. So seasons. I keep wanting to sing
Seasons of Love. Did every middle school chorus do that song, or was ours rather unusual?
I was in Texas, so that musical was not approved by the Houston Independent School District for
We did not discuss anything else to do with the musical. We just sang Seasons of Love when I was in middle school.
I mean,
chorus.
We all sang it because we were drama nerds and had heard the Cats recording, but it was not let's just say we didn't do it as the 8th grade musical. Although we did do Oliver, which seems really inappropriate, but whatever.
But it's about children, so I guess.
I mean, I played Nancy, the hooker with a heart of gold, so that was fun.
Who gets violently murdered by her boyfriend.
And also sings a song
good times.
That is about either liquor or sex called Oompapa. So,
you know.
But it was from the past. So
therefore.
So therefore it's fine. So yeah, so this was sort of inspired by agent Dongwon Song of Howard Moorheim Literary. He has a great newsletter called Publishing is Hard. And he talked about, he had one called like the selling season, about how basically everyone tries to sell everything in like the 8 weeks between Labor Day and Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Or I guess that's 3 months, however long.
Yeah.
Like September, October, November up till Thanksgiving. And then everything after that is a wash. So I thought we'd kind of discuss that and talk about whether or not we think that's true. I think it is, sort of.
Yeah.
I mean, it depends.
Yes. The thing is, everyone sort of comes back from the summer slowdown, which I think many editors were telling me their summers had not slowed down at all, which might explain why they were all taking so much longer than usual to respond to me. My summer did slow down quite a lot.
mine sort of did, but that's another story.
So we all come back from like this summer of reading and editing and going on vacation and whatnot, and say, okay, so it's fall, got that back to school energy, gonna bring my best material.
I bought new pens.
Yes.
I didn't, but I wanted to, and I didn't.
Did you buy a new planner though?
Not since I bought the last one. Don't shame me.
Yes. I do think it's very entertaining how, like, being the book nerds that we are, we all sort of still view the school year as, like, the beginning of the back-to-school time, as, like, a new start, a start of the new year, because that's just I was always excited to go back to school.
Yeah, same. Well, I think about it too. I mean, you think about like the September issue in fashion.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You know, I think that September always felt like a more, or the fall always felt like a more natural like start to the year to me than January. January always felt so arbitrary.
Yeah.
Because also like January, everything's really terrible and cold and dark. And
you're not, you're like the already mid-season. You're not like mid-season. Starting.
Yeah. Starting a new season, starting a new phase of things. I think that there is something to the idea that there is like a lot of activity between Labor Day and Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Mostly because I think it's like, oh, we all have to start thinking about the end of the, because a lot of publishers, their end of their fiscal year is December 31st. So they have to start looking at, okay, if I don't spend this money, I won't get this money next year.
Yeah.
So they have to start making decisions for that. It's also like when they start closing out future publishing seasons. Because I think there's sort of seasons in the way that we think of them as spring, summer, winter, autumn.
Yes.
And then there's publishing seasons where winter can be anywhere from January to July, depending on the publisher.
Maybe it includes December. Who knows?
Who can say?
I think also, so part of it is also that, I definitely, if I have something that's ready to go out in August, I'm like, no one's got like the energy right now. So I'll hold this until September because then it feels bigger. And it's also, if you are, some agents have commission escalators, but those usually reset at the beginning of the year. So if you're trying to jam in the last few sales to get that higher commission rate on the advances that come in,
yeah,
that's a September is when you really need to start doing that.
Well, for me, I look at it as sort of like all times are bad times because everyone is always busy. Yes. I mean, one of the reasons that summer is actually slower is because, especially if you're an editor with kids or an agent with kids, like your kids are now out of school and they got to be doing something. And you're probably a little bit more on deck for them than you would be at another point in the year when they're like occupied all day.
And the other part of it is just that it's, even if you yourself are not on vacation, if you want to buy a book, probably someone who is in that chain that
at
you need to get approved.
One person is on vacation.
Is on vacation.
Probably more.
Anytime between June and August. And even September, I've found lots of people going on vacation the week of Labor Day.
Yeah. Well, and now we're running into a lot of the Jewish holidays, which people take off.
October gets hard to get answers.
But none of that is, I would say, particularly worse now. I mean, the only time that I consider like a true dead zone is like Thanksgiving to Christmas.
Yeah.
Like at that point, I'm not selling something.
No.
I'm finalizing deals that have already been in progress.
I'm asking about where is the on-signing payment so that my client doesn't have to do both of these payments on her taxes next year.
I'm maybe doing something on submission so that I avoid the January glut. Because I think that there is something to be said for setting things out before the sort of popular times.
Yes, that is absolutely. I was going to, bless you. I was going to mention something.
Sorry.
Let's try that again. I was actually going to mention that as well, is that the downside to holding it for September or January when it feels like it'll feel like a bigger book with more energy of the new year going into it, is that everyone else is doing that too. And so yours might be in these, like, come in at the same time as everyone else's.
Yeah.
And then it still takes longer to read the book.
Yeah. I always say, like, when it's ready, send it out.
Yeah.
Because barring any other sort of like complicating circumstances, you know, the best time to go out is when it's ready.
Yeah.
Because you also don't know what else is on submission at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, a book that is very similar might have gone on submission the week before.
Yeah.
Or one might go the week after and you're the first. Like,
yeah.
So, and there's so much of that that you can't see. I think that this also applies to authors who are querying.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like this is when a lot of authors hear about this big times and are like, is that a better time to query? And I'm like, no, it doesn't. The only bad time to query is when an agent is closed.
Yeah. I've been getting because I briefly closed to queries.
While you changed agencies?
I changed agencies. I mean, it was only for like 2 weeks because I had to clear out my old query inbox, which is now cleared out.
Nice.
Not the request of manuscripts because that is still a giant dumpster fire of shame. But all the queries I have responded to.
Awesome.
But people kept querying me and I was just like,
nope.
No.
Not right
no
now.
No friend.
Yeah.
No. But The other time was like, if I get a query in December and it's like, I have recently finished my 50,000 word novel, and I'm like, bitch, you just did NaNoWriMo. Not that NaNoWriMo is a bad thing, but just to immediately query the book revise is just like, come on. You gotta revise it. Come on. I was not born yesterday.
I don't actually get a lot of those. I've heard tell from other agents who
in
are like,
in recent years, I have gotten a lot, but last year, I don't think I got that many. Mm. Maybe because I had bitched about it on the podcast.
Yeah, it's, you know, there's if it's a slow time, that means the agent is more likely to have time to read. And you actually don't know what is all else is on the agent's plate at any mm-hmm. given time. Because, like, you know, I had 6 clients send me manuscripts so far in September. So that is not something that I am advertising to the public in terms of don't query me right now. I'll just get to the queries when I have time for them. Yeah. When I have attention for them.
Well, and you never know. The other problem with trying to game the calendar is like you don't know what's going on in someone's personal life. Like,
yeah.
They might be ill, or they might be, you know, having a family issue, or they might be just, you know, struggling a little bit. So, you know.
Maybe they're moving and they've spent the entire month trying to find an apartment and then also. Get arrange like, all of the details.
I'm not that speaking that was... from experience no. or anything. I mean, is there any one time of year that you're like, nah, not a good time?
I have the last several years at Dunham Literary, we closed for queries in December because it felt like a good time. It was like none of us have like free weekends to devote to reading right now. Everything is busy all the time.
Yeah, let's talk about the Bataan-like death march of holiday parties. As we approach,
it's like, oh, every Friday and Saturday between December 1st and Christmas is blocked off. Okay. So, yeah, we would close to queries in December because it gave us a chance to sort of clear everything out and start the new year fresh. And then, of course, as soon as we opened, all of the people who became ready to query in December sent them like the first week of January. So it didn't help
twice
that
as many.
Much.
Yeah. Twice as many.
But it did. It was at least,
and we could also toast.
Good for morale.
Also, yeah, yeah. I mean, I've been thinking about maybe doing a similar thing. I feel like right now I want to stay open. Thanks. Until I want to stay open for as long as I can. But also, like, if I don't read queries for a month, it's not the end of the world. You know?
Yeah.
I ended up requesting a lot out of this most recent round of like shame clean out. Because I was like, I remember why I had kept this query around. It's because I was like, oh, I was interested in that. And then I just never got around to requesting it.
Yeah.
But like when I literally took my query inbox from, I think I had like 400 unread. It just in between the time that like my intern stopped being my intern and the time that I was able to turn my attention back to queries. And in that time I had missed a bunch of stuff. Because that's the other thing. Yeah. Is like you don't know like one of the reasons that we feel so much pressure is that like we never know what we're going to miss out on.
And there was one point. This summer where I had like 5 people email me because they had gotten offers of rep on their manuscripts. And I was like, so that's literally the only thing I can do for the next 2 weeks is read things that have offers of rep. Like I just, that's the only thing.
Yeah. Cause you don't want to just like read it and like dash it off and sort of like,
yeah,
you know, be hasty about it. You want to take your time and consider it and all that stuff.
Take it seriously.
Yeah. So it's just, there's a lot that goes into it. I would say the other thing too, is that like January through March, honestly feels like a little bit slower than summer to me
yes.
the last couple of years, just because it's so dark.
It's so miserable. No one wants to do anything.
We were literally just talking, like, it's only the first, it's like the last week of September, first week of October, and it's already gotten so dark at like 7 p.m. And it's
upsetting.
For those of you who live in like sunny states, I hate you. it's real bleak.
And we haven't even gotten to the end of daylight savings time yet. When we go back to the
end of daylight saving time is the weekend of my birthday.
Oh no.
I'm just like, fuck everything.
It's cool. As soon as like the minute we hit daylight savings time, change the time changeover, I'm like, I would just wanna go sit in a dark bar with my friends and like leather seats and like a sweater and drink some sort of like dark beer or like whiskey based thing and just talk to my friends. I like instantly go to
I love
like,
that I love that season
Irish heritage old. Nesting.
Listen, I loved being in Ireland. I was just like, this is amazing.
These are my people.
This is where I was meant to be. Actually I changed the back on my new phone. I changed the background to the long room.
Ooh, nice.
Very yeah cool. In the yeah, when everyone was like, yeah, I went to the long room, it was so beautiful, I cried. And I was just like, I mean, it's a beautiful room, but like, okay. And then I was like, oh my God, I understand. It's so beautiful. I think too, we could talk a little bit specifically about like what publishing seasons are, because I feel like
yes,
we briefly alluded to it earlier, but yes, there is like an actual thing.
And how some publishers have three and some have four, and that's not at all confusing.
And basically it just means the sort of like, so a season is sort of like a grouping of books loosely arranged by the calendar.
Yes.
So for publishers that have four seasons in their year, it more or less follows the
loosely correspond to the actual seasons, but the months sometimes fall into weird places.
Yeah. So a book that's published in fall 2020 might actually be published January 2021.
Yeah.
Because
of which is always good. Yeah. The one that's always confusing to me is most publishers who use winter wind up including December in that.
Yeah.
And so then you wind up being like, so winter 2021 could be December 2020. Great. That's.
I love how our industry is like a weird fucked up form of time travel. We're extremely low stakes in the future. I mean, not low stakes, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a bunch of books publishing in 2021 that I sold like this year. And I'm just like,
oh, yeah, I did my first deal for a book in 2022. Which,
damn.
That's a fake year, right?
Which book was that?
Book two in a 2-book contract.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-mm-mm.
I've also been going out with like 9 things in the last 2 weeks. So
oh, yeah.
I'm just like, Lord knows, and this is going to get published. And 2 of them are picture books. So it's like, and picture books take forever. God,
yeah.
Yeah, they don't tell you that, but picture books, like, instead of the 24-month mandated publication period, it's like 5 years.
Because you don't need to know when the illustrator is available, and the illustrator might be booked 4 years out.
Yeah.
So, everything goes slower in picture book time.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it turns out we don't have a whole lot to say about this, but what else is going on? Oh my god, Susanna Clark's writing a new book.
Oh my god.
Or, I guess, has written a new book.
Yes.
Comes out next year.
It sounds bonkers.
I'm so excited. Susanna Clark, if you're not familiar, wrote Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell and The Ladies of Grace Adieu, which came out 16 years ago.
Yeah. Oh my god.
I feel so old. I feel like a fucking crone. And her new book is called like Paranisi, and it's about like a house that also like surrounds an ocean.
Yeah.
It sounds insane. I love it. I mean, I was just like, yes, weird house books.
In the same vein as weird city books.
Yeah, weird city books, weird house books. You know, just give me like House of Leaves meets City in the City and I'm a happy woman. Yeah, I also saw Hustlers yesterday and it was really good.
I intend to go see it possibly this weekend.
There's a moment early on in the film that, I mean, it's been gift to death, but like you don't really understand it until it like happens, where Constance Wu's character goes up to the roof to talk to Jennifer Lopez's character, and she's like freezing because she's in her like tiny little outfit, but Jennifer Lopez is wearing this like mink. And she's like, where's your coat? And she's like, oh, I left it downstairs. And she's like, step into my fur. And she's wearing this like tiny little outfit and a fur coat, and she just enfolds Constance in this like embrace, and like you could hear everyone in the theater just like melting down, just having a moment where you're like, I question everything I thought I knew about myself, about what I found attractive. I just need to go sit in a dark room and think for a long time. Also, the moment, like the dance that Jennifer Lopez does to Fiona Apple's Criminal, like cannot be oversold. The sound design in this movie ought to win a fucking Oscar. It's so good.
Okay.
God, it's so good. You need to see it.
I do. I have just been traveling.
I know. And I'm about to embark on like a nightmare hell month of travel. I was just like, this seemed fine a year ago when I was planning this.
Ooh.
So this weekend, I'm actually not going anywhere, but it's my birthday weekend, so everything's a little bit of a shit show anyway. Next weekend, my sister and I are going to a wedding in D.C. The weekend after, I'm going to Tulsa for a writer's conference, to the Nimrod conference, if you're attending. And then the week after that, I'm going to Sirens. And then the week after that, I'm going to World Fantasy. And then I will die forever.
Why? Why did you do this to yourself?
I don't know. It seemed like a good idea at the time.
There was one year where I did 6 writers' conferences in 6 months. And I was like, I'm never doing that again. That was a terrible idea.
I mean, I really like travel. And I like, and these are conferences that I know I'm going to enjoy.
Yeah. And like Sirens and World Fantasy, you're not going to come out of it with like work to do.
Right. Right. So, and Nimrod, I'm really excited for because Carl Engel Laird at tour.com recommended me and said it was a really great organization and a great group of people. I'm actually giving a presentation on contracts, which feels very cool. I'm just like, yeah, contracts, sexy.
Fancy.
But yeah, I'm so tired. And I was hoping to stay in DC longer when my sister and I are at this wedding. Bridget and I are now just like having a conversation that we would normally have.
Yes.
And you get to enjoy it. Well, I guess we could take some questions.
Yes.
Let's see what we got. Let's see what we got. Tumblr. Or that. Whatever I just typed.
Did you type Tumblr?
Tumblr.
That wouldn't get us there.
Ooh, we have 3 envelopes. What does this mean? Ooh, okay. So, Cool Shades Anon asks, hello, Bridget and Jennifer. Can you talk a bit about trends in YA? I'm about to start a new novel, and I'm debating POV and tense. It's a contemporary YA, and I'm thinking of trying my hand at first-person present, as I've heard that's preferred in YA these days. The novel. I'm very sorry. The novel I'm currently querying is a YA historical third-person past, and I'm wondering if that could be contributing to the lack of requests I've received to my queries. Honestly, historical is a little harder right now, depending on the time period. We were actually just talking about this at our weekly meeting at New Leaf, like, of, you know, stuff that is, you know, stuff that is working and stuff that isn't. And everyone was sort of talking about, like, historical, like, it's working, but it's
sometimes.
Not.
Sometimes.
But simultaneously it is not, because I think that there is, like, people really do want it, but, like, it has to be a very kind of specific thing, and no one can really say what that thing is.
Yes. It's like Codename Verity or The Gentleman's Guide to Vice and Virtue. And like,
yeah, and it's like, okay, World War II or Regency. Great.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, voice and tense, like, I don't know. I just like, whatever works for the book.
Yeah. First person present often works very well for contemporary and YA. It's certainly not a requirement. First person past also works very well. Third person can work very well. I think it's more important to consider what will give us the best sense of the character.
Yeah.
Rather than what you think is going to be the most popular. And so in YA contemporary, people often like to have that very immediate sense of like, I am in this character's head.
Yeah.
But sometimes that's not the right approach at all. And so it's worth trying it out both ways and seeing what you like, seeing what connects you to the character.
And I think it's also, important to think about sort of tone and genre, because like, if you're writing like a very close claustrophobic thriller, first person present might mm-hmm. be great.
Yeah.
But if you're writing something that's like a little bit more removed and distant, like maybe just think about what the story is and what kind of thing it might need.
Yeah.
All right. Problem solved. Cool Shades Anon says, hi ladies, love the podcast. Thank you. Can you please talk about the bio section of a query letter for those of us with no publishing history? Some common advice is, if you don't have anything relevant to the book, say nothing, while others say, this is your chance to show your personality, make us want to work with you. I've also heard it should read like the bio on the back flap. Should we try to show our dedication to the craft by mentioning conferences and workshops? Do you care about hobbies?
If you don't have relevant publications, I would keep it to like 2 or maybe 3 sentences. If you can mention conferences if you've been to some that you really enjoyed, but they don't necessarily make something more attractive to me. I mean
things like Bible Paradise and,
yes,
you know,
Clarion,
yeah. Things like that.
Yeah, it's sometimes worth mentioning that you're an SCBWI member if that happens to be true, or like RWA, etc. But yeah, it can really be very brief. And I think it is, I always do enjoy seeing the writer's personality in it.
I always think that the best sort of basic bio is, you know, I live in place.
Yes.
With my blank,
yes,
family, cats, collection of horseshoes.
Yes.
And work as a blank.
Yes.
Or like, I'm a graduate student.
Yeah.
Studying blank. you know, it can be as detailed or as skimpy as you like.
Yeah, it's it is a chance to show a little bit about yourself, but if you feel too much pressure on that, don't worry about it.
Yeah, the one thing that I don't think is helpful is like I have loved books since I we all have.
That's why we're doing this.
That doesn't say anything specific to me about you.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed.
All right. Hello. Cool Shazanon asks, hello, I have a manuscript that I revised twice so far. I'm pretty satisfied with the developmental edits, and I'm now working on adding layers to character voice and setting. I'm curious about how perfect a manuscript has to be for you to offer rep, assuming you are excited about the story overall. Thank you. It's got to be good enough.
Yeah. It has to be good enough for me to be excited about it.
I mean, if we're excited about the story and we really like it and we have ideas to, like, take it to the next level, like, it's hard for us to say, like, what that level is.
Yeah.
Because I've taken on things that were, like, incredibly rough
and
done a lot of work on them. And I've taken things on that were, like, quite polished and done minimal work on them.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's just if we love the story.
Yeah. The thing is that you need to do enough work to get it to a place where you feel very confident about it and you feel that you can't get it to the next level on your own, because there's so much competition. And so I do need to feel really genuinely excited about it. And the most likely way to get me excited about it is for all of the pieces of character and voice and theme and plot to all be working together really, really well already. Even if I'm like, okay, so the climax doesn't work, but I know how we can fix that. And everything leading up to the climax is so compelling that I just couldn't stop reading. If I'm not going to get excited about the plot personally if I'm not also excited about the characters and the voice. So it's not like I'm like, oh, well, this is a good story and I'd like to continue reading it, or I love the writing and everything else can be fixed. There need to be enough pieces working well in concert for me to be really excited about it.
Yeah, exactly. All right. I'm kind of skipping a little bit back in time because I realize we have a few in here that we haven't answered.
Okay.
All right. I've been submitting fiction agent queries / lit mags for over a decade. I've had some success with decent / mid-tier lit mags. I've gotten runner-up type rejections from major magazines. On the novel side, a great developmental editor told me my manuscript is ready/good, but I'm still plugging along, getting vague rejections. Not that anyone deserves a big break, but I feel like I've been paying my dues. I'm pretty sure I'm good/ not a crackpot. Do I just buck up? Is it time to change tacks? That's a good question.
Yeah, that's a
it's a good question strategy. That unfortunately is, without knowing the specifics of the actual book in question, it's tough for us to say like what exactly has not quite worked out.
Yeah.
And
I think also it's partly how many rejections have you gotten on the novel and what stage
on
did
this
they come
particular
at?
I this mean if you've been specific... querying the same novel for a decade, definitely change tacks.
Yes.
Soon.
And I hope that
write a new
while...
one immediately.
I hope that while you've been querying, you've also been sort of thinking about new projects and working on new books, because that is partly the best way to distract yourself from the struggles of querying, and partly the best way to position yourself for a long-term career or the next shot. And so, yeah, if it's like you've gotten, you know, 15 query rejections, that might mean you should take another look at your query, see if that's really working as well as it should.
I mean, vague to me says personalized but not super detailed.
Yeah.
Because I feel like they would have said form.
Yeah.
If it had been just like dear author.
Yeah.
So that to me says it's not necessarily the query, but it might be the book.
Yes. So that's the other thing.
But again, we can't really tell.
Yeah. And it's again about numbers. I've had more and more people respond to my passes on their query saying, this is like my 10th rejection. Should I just give up? And I'm like, 10 is nothing.
10 is nothing.
10 is nothing.
And also don't reply to your rejections.
Yes. I am not your
advisor. I don't mind a thank you, but like,
yeah,
but I don't want a thank you either.
Yeah. It
fills me with dread, honestly, when I see like a re-query, like,
yes. Like, oh God, what like horrors await?
What abuse is going to be heaped on my face at this time?
And I definitely don't resent people who don't respond. Like, that's totally fine. I'm not going to hold that
against
you.
This isn't like a job interview where, like,
you should send a thank you.
Like, it's, you know, we understand, it's understood. Yes. I would say, too, that, like, maybe think about what your end goal is. Like, what kind of career do you want to have? It may be that, you know, you should just focus on, like, the short fiction piece of it for a minute and kind of try and develop that. It may be that you really double down on the novel side of things, because sometimes just really focusing on one aspect of your career can really reap benefits in that area, and then that will open doors in the other.
Yes.
But don't lose hope. Like, change tacks only as far as it is useful to you.
Yeah.
Think about what you're working on, the number of responses you've gotten, the kinds of responses you've gotten, and, you know, maybe it's time to try a new project, but, like, work on something that you really are passionate about, and don't worry about, like, chasing the market or whatever. Like, yeah. Truly, find something that you think is fun and go for it.
As we were just saying about Susanna Clarke, it's been 15 years since her first novel, and she's got her second ready now.
Yeah.
And so some people take 15 years. And may all of those who take 15 years to write a new novel sell 4 million copies in the meantime.
In fucking indeed. Cheers. All right, so we have a couple of things that are not questions, but are immensely ego gratifying, so I'm going to read them. Cool Shades Anon says, "Ladies, this isn't really a question, but I just listened to episode 49 about Lupine Literary and agent Danielle Smith, and holy shit, I totally missed this news a year ago. This is what I get for taking a Twitter break for like 3 years. Sheesh. This is totally shocking to me. So weird. Also, strong bag Trugdor reference for the win. Thanks for all the great content you provide." That is from Kristen, who may be the same Kristen who's a donor, but regardless, thank you. And another Cool Shades Anon says, "Not a question, just praise. I'm listening to your old episode about professional jealousy and competing for a client. I just want to say good for both of you and that I really respect how you handled that. I had a similar situation in which a friend and I both applied for a job. And not only did that ruin the friendship, but many collateral ones. All that happened from applying, even before my friend got the job. I'm glad you didn't have to experience chaos to master being classy." Well, I'm really sorry that happened to you.
Yes.
That is stressing me out just reading about it. Let me see where we are time-wise. Oh, my God. We are just like, probably have time for like 3 or 4 more questions before we do talk about them. So Cool Shades Anon says, "Thanks for your great podcast. I've been listening a lot. So, I get that Twitter is the it place for authors and or industry people, but I just don't like it. I look relatively legit, around 1,000 followers to anyone checking me out, and I have a writing community outside Twitter. I could try to get into Twitter other than my once in a blue moon post, but everyone complains about the black hole anyway. I just don't get Twitter. As a writer, can I check the box and not bother?"
If you're not really using Twitter, then it's not really an asset.
I would also maybe think about like why you think that it's the it place. Like,
yeah,
if you have less than 1,000 followers, but they're all like quality people that like you enjoy interacting with while you're there.
Yeah.
I would say that that's actually a quality use of your time on Twitter.
Absolutely.
Because really the best, I think we talked about this last time, like the best use of your time on social media is building community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is building connections with other writers, starting conversations, like, and if you can use your time to do that, you don't actually even need to tweet that much, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, it also depends on what genre you write. But unless it's nonfiction, platform isn't really very important just generally. It can certainly be helpful, but if it's not like mind-blowing, then it's not really going to make the decision as to whether or not you get an agent, as to whether you get a publishing deal. And Instagram is more and more of a thing, so that might actually be, if you enjoy Instagram and would rather do that, then that can be a viable option as well.
Yeah. Instagram, I think, is great for people who hate social media, because like you can just post a picture and like
the end,
content created, bam.
Here's a picture of my book. Here's a picture of what I'm reading right now.
Here's a picture of my cat holding my book.
Yes.
Oh. All right. Cool Shades Anon says, "Thank you so much for an insightful and friendly podcast. Do you agree with super strict advice on query word count, i.e. don't exceed 250 words, period? If so, what if there's a co-writer so you've got two bios to get through? what about the query shark rule about jumping right in rather than starting with things like genre and word count? Do you harbor any other strong query feelings? Thank you.
It should be compelling. That's
it shouldn't be too long.
Yeah, if I have to like scroll too many times to get through it, I'm going to start losing interest. This is also, I've started reading a lot of queries on my phone on the subway as well. And so when I have to like, when it's got the whole my address, then your address, and like header information, like
yeah,
a formal letter.
We don't need addresses.
Like,
this
scrolling
email, it's
through
fine.
Where's the interesting stuff? I do think that keeping it to roughly a page is ideal. If you've got two author bios, they can each be fairly short.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, at the end of the day, like, we only start to notice when it's, like, egregiously long.
Yeah, yeah. Or when I've gone through, like, three paragraphs and I'm like, so what's the story already?
Yeah.
Get to the point. So I think Query Shark is very helpful for basically that kind of thing, which is, like, get to the point. Stop talking about your themes and tell me what the story is. I think jumping right in works perfectly fine. I think saying, hello, this is my YA novel of 75,000 words. Please enjoy. Also works fine right up front. I don't have strong feelings one way or the other.
Well, this other question is similar. I think it's along the same lines. And they say, I apologize for any emotional trauma the following text might cause. If it helps, I feel like a monster. Dear Mrs. Smith and Jedden. I am contacting you because you represent books. Have you ever wondered what it would be like to talk about the most glaring mistakes and queries that everyone should already know to avoid, yet too many people still make? But seriously, I am curious, which of the most obvious no-nos do you see over and over again? I mean, the obvious no-nos are just not following instructions, quite frankly. You know?
So many people have started sending me synopses instead of pages, and I want the pages, and
I don't care
about your synopsis.
I want both. I want both, you know? Like, the whole thing is that, like, I want the synopsis and the pages so that I can, like...
Well, I want the pitch and the pages. I don't want a full synopsis.
Oh, we asked for a synopsis.
No.
I've always asked for a synopsis. So that I can read ahead and be like, do I want to know where this goes?
Yeah. I ask for that when I'm at the stage where I request the manuscript, because otherwise I am completely incapable of judging whether or not a synopsis sounds interesting.
Oh.
But yeah, I've started getting a lot of people who are not sending me the pages, and I'm like, I just want to know what your writing is like. Is this going to be fun to read? The other one is, yeah, as I said, just like talking about the themes for three paragraphs and not actually telling me what the story is about. This book explores the ideas of such and such.
And like super generic com titles.
Yeah.
We talked about this before. Like, Harry Potter meets Game of Thrones. Like, that tells me nothing.
That means nothing to me.
Children having sex with their sisters? Like, what does that mean? That could mean anything. It could mean anything. Like, what are the comparison points there?
Yes.
Anyway. So, we're at the 40-minute mark. So, I guess we'll have a short episode this time. Bridget, what are you reading right now?
I just started Queens of Geek by... I'm going to need you to look that up. I think it's Jen Wilde.
Sorry. Jen Wilde, yeah.
Okay.
Wilde of the knee.
So I just started Queens of Geek by Jen Wilde, which seems like I'm like literally like five pages in, so I don't know where it's going, but so far it seems like a really fun sort of geeky con based YA contemporary it's going to be very charming.
Convention, not like con, like
yes.
Long con.
Yes.
That sounds delightful.
Yes. What about you?
Well, I'm still reading A Perfidious Distortion of History because on brand. But I actually, so I gave my mom Truly Devious for her birthday.
Ooh, nice.
And she texted me, actually she texted me the other day, and let me see if I can find the text. I didn't actually realize it was a trilogy, so now I feel like a monster. But, so she says, just finished Truly Devious. Why didn't you tell me it would be continued? How long do I have to wait to know what happened? Damn! So I started rereading Truly Devious so that I also... You did not witness it, but Bridget just did this, like, really classy sort of sideways slither move off the couch, and it was really great. She's also dressed like a space cowboy today, so it's...
Look, she's sometimes got... you want to wear an art teacher dress with space boots.
And pleather pants. It's delightful. It's 100% delightful. So I told her that there's a sequel, and that the sequel is out now, and then I just also found out that the conclusion to the trilogy is out in January.
Oh, awesome.
And I'm hopeful that one of my many friends at Harper Children's will be able to get me a copy of it so that I can send it to her and she yes. won't disown me.
Friends at HarperCollins who might be listening to the podcast.
I mean, if you're listening.
If you're out there.
We love you. We yes. love Maureen Johnson. Let's yes. make a deal. So I guess we've come to the end of the episode. It's a short one this week. But hey, we are committed to producing the hashtag content. Thank you so much for everyone who sent in a question. Thank you to everyone who has donated, who has left a review, who has subscribed, who has sent in comments, concerns, questions, money, literally everything. We love you. The survey, as a reminder, is up for another couple weeks. Yes, thank you to our donors this week, Kristen and Joy. Thank you to everyone who's ever donated. And until next time, happy reading. Bye. Bye.